Welcome to the Operation Move podcast. My name is Zoe, and today I thought I'd talk about something that comes up a lot because I see people talking about their training on Twitter, and I'm very big into trying not to give people unsolicited advice, and so I do not say anything. But the benefit of having a podcast is I can say whatever I like. So in the course of things I've learnt the hard way, there are some general themes of really bad ideas that people have about running and training that I thought I'd talk a little bit about today. One of the most common things that I see people doing when they are upping their training, whether they're going to start training for a half marathon or a marathon, or it's just something that's requiring a lot more running time, one of the sort of instincts you have is to go, well, I need more time. I'm currently spending time doing all of this strength training or cross training. I need to specifically train. Therefore, I'll stop doing the strength training. I'll stop doing the cross training. I'll have more time to run and I'll just focus on that. And after my race or my event, I'll get back into doing all the stuff that I normally do, which sounds kind of okay in theory, but the reality is very, very different. Chances are that cross training and that strength training that you were doing is the thing that's stopping you from getting injured. And part of that is because running is not a variable sport. So you are essentially moving the same way over and over, and you're just sort of, you know, like going forward. You're not moving side to side. You're not jumping. Probably less so if you are a trail runner, that then that would incorporate a lot more variability into your training, which is a good thing. But you're essentially moving in the same way with the same patterns, and chances are it's even worse than that because runners tend to be pretty habitual. So you probably run the same route every day, and you probably run always in the same direction. So you're not even like running like one, doing one loop clockwise and one like counterclockwise, because going, oftentimes people find, I always found that like there's one way which would feel good and the other way which would feel weird. And it's even more pronounced if you're running on a track because you're always running one way. So even aside from all of the things that you do in strength training that supports running in terms of, making sure like all of your muscles are doing what they're supposed to do, that things are activating, that you are, you know, developing, you know, like power in your legs so that you're able to use it, and that you are, you know, you're working on your core so that stays active through your run, that you are working on things so that you are able to maintain good form. All of those things will happen in your strength training and your cross training. But even aside from that, it just gets you to move in a way that your body is not used to doing, and that in and of itself is going to protect you from injury. So what's very easy to happen is like, oh, I just quit all of this training and now I've done all of this running and now all of a sudden I've got this, you know, repetitive use injury. But it's not actually all of a sudden. It's because you have stopped, you know, like your ITB has now flared up because you haven't squatted in, you know, 5 weeks or whatever it is. And like most people will tell you, the most challenging part of marathon training is getting to the start line, not being injured. So anything that is going to protect you from injury is worthwhile, and you are far better off sacrificing some of your run time to, you know, maintaining all of your strength training and incorporating variability and, you know, and doing things that are just going to make you a much more well-rounded athlete. And speaking of no time and things that you shouldn't skip, another thing that you should not skip is the warm-up. If you don't have time to warm up, you're so much better off cutting the run portion of your run short and doing your full warm up, because just the same as with strength training, it's just a recipe for disaster. And I know that, you know, warming up is a bit like, sort of accessory work or strength training, or in my case, rehab, in that it's boring, but it is really, really important. And the harder the workout, the more important the warm up is. So, you know, if you are looking at doing a hard quality session, it would not be unusual for you to be running at an easy pace for about 15 minutes before that, and then, you know, like working your way through about, you know, 10 minutes of accelerations and decelerations and resting periods and some stretching and all of that sort of stuff. And it can be hard to wrap your head around, because initially kind of like the draw card of some of those faster sessions is like, yeah, but they're over more quickly. But you actually have to warm up. So they're not any quicker. They're often longer. And that time that you invest into the warm up is just as important as the time that you invest into the meat of that session. So if you don't have time, then you want to reduce the repetitions in the session itself and not rob yourself of the warm-up, because it's going to mean that you don't get as much out of yourself in the session, so you benefit from it less. And it's going to feel a lot more awful because your central nervous system is not warmed up. And so you're probably also going to then have this idea that you hate intervals, which, you know, like maybe you do, but you can hate them a lot less if you warm up properly. You know how usually, like if you're doing an interval session and like the first one feels awful and then the second one feels a little bit better, and that's because you weren't warm for the first one. So a full warm up is going to make you enjoy it more, you'll get more out of it, your body will adapt more, and it's one of those things that out of all the things that you could skip, that's not the way to go. Another really common things that people sort of will tend to skip if they get a little bit time poor is, like, say if you have like an easy run and there are strides at the end, or there's an easy run and there's hill sprints at the end, and people will go, oh well, I only had time for the easy run. you can shorten that easy run. And you can look at that and you can know that the quality part of that session are the hill sprints or the strides. So you might shorten the amount of repetitions you do there, and you might shorten the easy portion as well, but you can get a version of the whole session done even when you're a little bit time poor. And it's a bit like one of those things where it's kind of like buying into your own bullshit a bit too much, because, like, you know how much time you have, and you know what the intensity part of that session is, so you know that to get everything in, you might need to, say, shorten that 5Ks to 4Ks or 3Ks or whatever it is, or, you know, take it from 30 minutes to 20 minutes. And that way you're going to get the full benefit of the session, even with, you know, working with the time constraints that you have. And the next few things aren't really, I mean, they're not exactly, some of them are bad ideas, but it's more sort of ideas about, it's very easy to kind of like look, a lot of times you will look at people who are more accomplished than you, which tends to mean they're faster than you, and you'll sort of like see what they do for their, you know, half marathon or marathon training and look at replicating it, but it's not necessarily the same thing. So, like, there is one thing that people, particularly going into a first marathon, will look at, like wanting to do a 35 or 36K run. And that's something that you would need to talk through with your running coach about, balancing your confidence going into the marathon versus what you need physically. But from a purely physical point of view, there is zero benefit to running for more than 3 hours. And after 3 hours, it becomes a lot more likely that you'll get injured. So like the cost sort of benefit of it is not great. So if you need to do it once as a confidence boost, particularly for your first marathon, then that's a conversation you can have with your coach. But if you're looking at it from a purely physical point of view and purely in terms of getting your body conditioned and ready, you are far, far better off, like say doing a 3 hour run on the weekend and say a 1.5 to 2 hour run during the week than having like a 4 hour run on the weekend. You're going to get loads more benefit from that because you are getting an aerobic benefit from both of those runs rather than kind of like capping out at that 3 hours on that long run and then essentially just risking a lot of things that you don't need to risk with that extra time. And another thing that's a bit of a mystery for people, or people assume that split runs, so, you know, like say you've got 10Ks to run and you run 5Ks in the morning and 5Ks in the evening, or you run 5Ks, you drop the kids off at school and then you run 5Ks after that, or maybe you like run to your boot camp class, run before, run after, that kind of thing. There tends to be an assumption that it's not the same as running continuously, and that might be true in terms of your mental confidence in of sustaining the distance, but physically your body can't tell the difference. There's no substantial difference between any of those scenarios, and so embracing it as an option can really open up a lot more opportunities for you to do things in a way that's going to work with your lifestyle and is not going to be this real sort of time suck. And you know, you don't necessarily want all your runs to be that way, but as many of them as you need to be that way can be that way. And it might surprise you actually how challenging that second run is. Like you kind of think, well, you've had this big break, but you're not recovered. So it doesn't feel like you've had a big break. And there's no negative essentially to doing things that way. I mean, you wouldn't want to necessarily do all your long runs that way because you want to be able to have that confidence to be kind of like out there for a continuous period of time and on your feet for a continuous period of time. But in terms of that actual session, it's no different to doing it in like breaking it up into two versus doing it as one long thing. And similarly, there's probably an opinion about walk breaks, which I think really happens from like when you are starting to learn to run, like the whole goal is to walk less. So you kind of develop this weird relationship with walking, like it's some kind of failure, or, you know, it's quote cheating, or, you know, whatever it is. But the reality is that walking is a really valuable part of running, and it doesn't matter how advanced you are, chances are it's always going to be a pretty valuable part of running. And so it is the kind of thing that from a mental point of view, you don't want to get into the habit of kind of like you start walking and then the walking gets longer and longer and longer and the running gets less and less. So, you know, if you are planning on using walk breaks, it can be good to go in with a plan, like I'm going to run for this amount and then I'm going to walk for this amount. So it's not like just doing what you feel like, because often for most of us, if we were doing what we felt like, we'd just be walking, we wouldn't be running at all. So there's that element to it. But in terms of, say, if you are running 5 kilometers, if you run 5 kilometers continuously, or you run 5 kilometers and every 5 minutes you walk for 1 minute or whatever it is there any difference between those sessions? No, there's not. It's the same. Body can't tell the difference. It is and that's sort of essentially, I mean, really, that's how most interval training works, is that it's all about the time that you spend doing the work, not if like that's broken up in a way. And even you, and it sort of ties into that split run thing, like even if there's a longer break, it doesn't matter. So, you know, it can be by working up towards not having breaks, it can be great because you can kind of like get into the zone a bit more. It's a little bit less stop and start. It, you know, it can feel a little bit easier. But, you know, a lot of times you will find yourself on, say, a long run and, you know, doing a bit of a strategic hike up a hill so that when you get to the top, you're not completely exhausted, so you can take advantage of the downhill. It might just be that you prefer having walk breaks, so you're just enjoy going, yep, I'm going to run for 4 minutes and I'm going to walk for 30 seconds. But that is not sort of less valuable than somebody who runs continuously. And what you'll probably find is if you ran continuously and then you did walk run, your average pace at the end would probably be the same because you're just fatiguing less with the walk breaks. And probably the final thing that I would say that is most misunderstood is fueling, which will vary greatly depending on what your goals are. But because there's this sort of, you know, because most people sort of know that your body has like about enough get up and go for an hour of running, you know, that's sort of like the glycogen that's stored. You have about enough for an hour, so they're kind of like, oh, okay, well, you know, I won't need anything for the first hour and then I'll start eating. That's too late. So depending on, there's nothing wrong with doing, a lot of people will choose to do sort of runs just with water, particularly if they're at a low intensity, and even if they're over an hour, that's not a huge deal. But for most race type scenarios, you have to get really good at consuming fuel on the go, because you're going to need to start before you start, and it's going to need to be super regular, you know, like every 10 minutes or something like that. So you can't get, so while you can do water runs, it's not really helping your body learn how to take on fuel and how to use it and how to kind of like digest and run at the same time. So it's not a super useful thing to do. And what I think probably the other thing about fueling is it's not just about, you know, like getting the most out of your quality sessions. And for quality sessions, I would definitely say that you want to have a really solid fueling strategy so your body can perform at its highest level, and then it can adapt to a higher level than if you were unfueled. But it's also about how quickly you recover and how potentially how sore or not sore you'll be. And I would say that that is the biggest lesson that people could take about fueling, is that it's not just about, can I get to the end of this workout and still feel like I've got energy in the tank? It's actually about, you know, like how your body then feels the next day. So if you are well fueled, you are not going to have that sort of that same level of fatigue and muscle soreness. And so that quicker recovery time just allows you to get on and do other things, and you're not carrying too much fatigue from session to session. So I think it's, fueling is more about, you know, like how can you look after your body and look after your muscles. So it's getting, you're going to be asking a lot of your body, and you need to give it what it needs to function, and then in turn it's going to be able to do more in the, you know, the next week or the next month. And I think that unfortunately in running, you can get, people can get into this headspace of, you know, like, well, I kind of like got into running from a point of view of like burning calories, therefore like I don't want to eat while I'm running. That's just a, it's a bad headspace to get into, because the more you deprive your body of food, the less it's going to be able to do. So if you finish a run and you are feeling really hungry afterwards, that's a sign that you will be underfueled, or a lot underfueled, depending on on how long of a session it is and everything like that. So you can start sort of taking on board that feedback that your body is giving you and going, okay, I need to actually have more. If you start feeling like at a consistent level of effort, your pace starts dropping off at the end of the run, you are also underfueled. And if you sort of like notice that you're having to push that little bit harder to sort of for the same level of pace, also underfueled. If you feel super sore the next day or tired or feel like you just cannot eat enough food and there's like a bottomless pit, underfueled. All of those things are a sign of underfueling, and the better you get at working out what is going to work for your body, then the better you're going to feel the next day, the more energy you will have for the next session, and the more quickly your body is going to adapt and improve. And so if you are looking at your training and you're thinking, gee, you know, like I'm doing all this work and I'm not really improving, what, you know, like what is going on? Usually it is probably like the first two things I would always look at are, number one would be sleep, and the next one is, are you eating enough? And because most of the time it's not to do with your training, it's, are you fueling the machine? And if you're not, then that is where you're going to get your biggest improvements from, not from, you know, running more or, you know, like working harder. Chances are you're working plenty hard enough. Next week, I will be back and I'll be talking to Kirsten, who has now run her 50-kilometer race. And so we'll be hearing from her, which is very exciting. And on Monday, Learn to Run starts. So if you would like to join us for the March group, you can get 20% off with the code FRIENDS at checkout. We now have options for beginner, intermediate and advanced, and as always with our Learn to Run group, if those options at any stage need adjusting, then I do individual programming for people. So you aren't sort of locked into a set program, because I think that that's probably one of the biggest challenges that people have when they're starting a program, is that everyone is different, everyone is coming in at a different level, and it's really easy to get stuck when something is too challenging or it's not challenging enough. And if it's too challenging, particularly, you can kind of internalize that as a personal failure, when it's just that the program has failed you, you haven't failed the program, and it needs to be able to be flexible and it needs to be able to adapt, and you need to be able to look at it and go, okay, this needs to be changed here so that you can have a better experience. You know, like you want it to be challenging, but it should also be enjoyable as well. So at any stage with Learn to Run, those changes can be made so that you're always getting something that's going to work for you and for your lifestyle and your schedule and also what your current level of fitness is. So if you have any questions about that, feel free to email me or pop into the community group too, and we can have a chat about it there. And I will speak to you next week.